This is Kate Harness with 307 Net Info, and this afternoon I'm joined by Joe Deedon from TAC1 Consulting. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Hi. Good afternoon. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, because I know this comes really at the very end of what has been a long week for you in Johnson County. This is your third year here.
Yep.
And this is your third year really talking to teachers and students, but really training teachers and students and also our law enforcement about what to do if they find themselves in an active shooter situation. It seems startling in some ways that we need to even think about that in Johnson County, but maybe you just tell us a little bit about TAC1.
Yeah, so we've been up here this week, and you're correct, it's our third year. Working with K through 12 students, right, dedicated lesson plan for the student body, obviously along with the faculty and the school district, officials. Today we kind of wrapped it up with the training piece for law enforcement, right? So we had every, police officer and every, sheriff's deputy from both the PD and the SO in attendance today. So, it was a culmination of a 2 years of training. This year was more of the evaluation piece all around. It's important to us. Started TAC1 in 2008, right? Roughly, I taught our first class in Riverton over at CWC. So, anytime we come up to Wyoming and work with different areas, it's important to us, right? These rural areas have to be a little, they have to do less with more, right? So, we're on our, as far as the student piece. We rolled that out in 2018. We're one of the only companies that are offering a dedicated lesson plan, right? Not just drills or exercises for the student body, right? K through 12. Obviously age specific, right? As far as they get through the grade level, but it introduces to our program. So, unfortunately life skills, right? So when these kids go off to college, get off, into the workplace out in the real world, they'll know what to do to keep themselves or their future families, out of harm's way. So, we're on our, 15th year, primarily training law enforcement, school districts nationwide. We're based out of Denver, Colorado. It's been a great week, long week. The team and I have been putting in long hours working with, the various entities of the community, and it's been great. Seeing a lot of good things this week.
Thank you. What do you do in the week? Maybe you talk us through what year one was like, but also, what actually do you teach students and staff? And of course, there are differences in those age groups and how you deliver that information. What is it that they actually learn?
Yeah, so, the school faculty piece and the law enforcement piece has been out for, about 20 some years now, right? So when we came into the district, 3 years ago, we were taking, what the school faculty has already been, exposed to different training programs and protocols, and just, updating them on current based, based trends and tactics. So it's a three-pronged response, right? So we have a barricade option, a fight option, and in it what I call an evacuation option, right? So that was for staff, and then the new piece to all this was the K through 12 training, right? So the school district hadn't had that piece yet. So that's kind of what's starting at ground zero there with the kids. So, K through two, it's very similar to what they do in their fire drills and other safety drills, when we're not here. Obviously it's very age specific. It's a 15 minute session. It teaches the little kids to kind of under the direction of the one staff, the one teacher in the room to find good places to hide, during their lockdowns, outside, outside of the door. And then just learning how to evacuate a little bit more coordinated. I mean, they are little, little kids, but teach them how to just kind of follow the leader, hand signals, so that if they were evacuating, the teacher can safely get them from point A to point B. So, like I said, that's 15 minutes, right? And they actually think they're playing a game. They think they're playing hide and go seek and, basically tactical ninjas. That will make zero sense to anybody unless they see the program, but it makes a lot of sense to the kids. Obviously low stress, but it introduces them to the program, right? Because when they get to 3 through 5, right? We teach the kids to, one, evacuate as a group, that's staff led, right? So And when we talk about evacuations, it's not getting all the way out of the building, but, you know, let's say I have a group of kids that's in a library or a cafeteria, somewhere that's a more open area, and we need to get them safely back to a good location to lock down, you know, where they can lock a door, barricade, you know, and ride it out. So on that third to fifth grade piece, they have that. And then they help the staff member barricade the door, right? We talk a lot about using, you know, teamwork, communicating under stress, right? Making eye contact, using their voices, so that they can help the teacher, right? If there's one teacher, 15, 20 kids in a classroom, that teacher can kind of multitask and, I guess, quarterback that response by the student body. So that's 3 through 5, right? That's a 30-minute session inside of a room. And when we come out, like, on scene and with our staff and the TAC 1 team, you know, we don't use a lot of harsh language, right? Especially with the young kids, right? We talk, you know, we're doing safety drills. They already do them. We talk about more of not even really active shooter. We don't really say that. Typically it's the kids who say it, or maybe staff members, you know, because the kids, they're smart at that age. Some of them will start talking about guns. And if somebody tries to come in the building and shoot us, you know, we don't use that terminology. We talk about, you know, a lockdown is for an intruder, right? Somebody's safe, somebody that we don't know in this building, you know, didn't check in at the main office and get a visitor badge, that you know, could be a dangerous person, right? So we try to take that approach. We don't, you know, scare them. We don't really even like to put any thoughts in their head. We kind of just let that open discussion kind of evolve. And you know, unfortunately, it's kind of sad because a lot of the kids will start mentioning those things, you know, because they watch the news, they get on the internet. But yeah, that's 3 through 5, right? Now, when we get to middle school, in most Wyoming districts, it's 6 through 8. They have the evacuation piece, right? They got the barricade piece. But then when we get the evacuation piece, we teach them a little bit more how to move safely through the building or get out of the building on their own, because they're, you know, they're left unsupervised, right? So, you know, you may have a sixth or seventh grader, you know, rotating to specials like music, welding, agricultural shop, you know, PE, to where they're, you know, the teacher isn't with them in the hall, moving them around, right? They're outside of that homeroom all day, but or they're in the bathroom by themselves. So, you know, if they were to get a lockdown or some type of thing on the intercom, you know, they can safely get themselves, you know, back to a good point where there's another adult or out of the building. So at that age, they're a little bit more mature, right? And you can teach them how to safely move through the building using what we call quick peeks and angles. Again, because they start becoming unsupervised on campus. So that's huge, I think, for the middle schoolers, just to kind of start giving them that responsibility, you know, to be autonomous if they have to get themselves into a safe location. And then we add the piece where if a staff member decides to you know, try to disarm or take down somebody in the building and they're yelling for help, we teach the middle school kids to, if they're willing to do so, especially inside of a classroom, might be one teacher trying to defend that room, to where they can kind of trap limbs. And it's kind of hard to explain over radio without, you know, images, but you know, where they're using their resources effectively, right? They're trapping limbs, basically bear hugging, spreading out their body weight, almost like a wrestler, you know, on the other free arm, the legs, just trying to buy that staff member some more time till they get another adult. And that's where it gets a little, not really, you know, a little more complex, right? Because you're starting to bring some kids into what might be a dangerous-ish situation. But again, you know, they're just trying to buy time till we get another staff member. Yep, and that's about an hour and a half long session for the 6 through 8. And then we get to high school, it's 2.5 hours. So, you know, it's the full almost adult version, right? Because those kids can have adult conversations. They drive, they have jobs, they're getting ready, you know, go to college, go down to vocational school, whatever, work at Walmart. And they get it, you know, and we teach them to be fully autonomous, right, with or without an adult. So they're barricading on their own, they're evacuating on their own, and they're making that choice to fight back if they choose to do so.
And so what is the current protocol for what you are supposed to do if you find yourself being shot at or potentially right. being shot at? indiscriminately.
Yeah, and see, that's evolved over the years, right? And so the current trend is, you know, what the federal government would call the run, hide, fight, right? That's been out since right after about El Paso, you know, shooting at Fort Hood, right, 2012, when that service member, you know, killed other service members on a what we would call a weapons-free, you know, federal facility. So prior to that, it was just kind of shelter in place, right? You know, after Columbine, obviously, and some other shootings, you know, our government had to say, okay, how do we come up with a plan, at least for students and staff, to bring our kids back from, you know, April 1999, then the summer of 1999, back into school in the fall, right? That's where we had the first initial shelter in place, right? Lock the door, shut off the lights, hide away from the door. That was pretty much standard, you know, and that's what FEMA, Homeland Security was pushing out, right, for everybody, right, for schools, public, all that.
And the purpose of that was stay as safe as you can until other people right. could come and, you know, get rid of the problem
right.
in whatever form it is, and you can then escape. We
right.
know that that wasn't always successful.
Right, exactly. You know, they were relying so heavily on law enforcement, right? Because obviously we got that training after Columbine and the rest of, you know, the law enforcement, you know, the United States, you know, non-SWAT related response, right, for patrol, that raid response. And so that was the thinking, right? Well, okay, we got the cops now trained up not to wait for the SWAT team. You know, we've got a four person element going in. But as those other start shootings, you know, we got Virginia Tech, Fort Hood, you know, our, then 2012, you had Newtown and the Aurora movie theater shooting, you know, in Denver. So that kind of exposed that, okay, we're relying too heavily on the cops to get there quick, right? We're getting them in there in smaller elements, so they're not waiting for 22 people to show up, you know, the SWAT team. They're using these little patrol raid teams, but that's still not quick enough, right? So those were kind of that 2012 shift from Fort Hood, you know, 2008-09-ish, you know, Virginia Tech, then 2012 Aurora movie theater shooting in Newtown. Really forced the federal government to come back and say, okay, we need to empower at least the adult workplace, right? FEMA, Homeland Security, you know, because a lot of private businesses and everything go off of what our federal government recommends, right? And say, okay, no longer just sitting there waiting, right? We got to empower adults now to evacuate and fight, right? So that's when that three-pronged kind of response was at least adopted by the federal government to push out to the masses, right? Whether you're a private sector employee, public, you know, employee, or you know, just the average Joe Schmo citizen out there, right, with their family. So that's kind of the evolution. But unfortunately, it takes, you know, these major shootings, just like Uvalde, you know, to where we take a step back and say, okay, why did we have the failures or successes we did? You know, and everybody starts to kind of circle back and reevaluate their program, right? So the cops will look, okay, wow. You know, we're still making mistakes. Okay, law enforcement, still a lot of work to do, right? Now we have the fire and EMS side. We need to get in there quicker to help these victims who are wounded, right? So they don't bleed out or their, you know, their chest collapse because they got a sucking chest wound. So that kind of makes, when we get those big shootings like that, just like the, you know, like I said, movie theater in Newtown, 2012, it forces everybody to come to the table, almost like we talked about, you know, a dinner table conversation from the government on down to just everybody. You know, and it starts to spark some changes and conversations.
And of course, you can discuss this as much as you like,
right.
But when you find yourself in that moment, people behave very differently than they think they would. I mean, I think many people could point at Uvalde.
Right.
And were surprised by the way that there was that reaction. There's still a lot of controversy about, you know, what was the response, who was right, who was wrong, and so on. But the reality was that in the heat of the mm-hmm. moment, it didn't go as it should have gone.
Right.
And so that is why you're here, I believe, is to help us practice so that when we do, should the unthinkable happen, mm-hmm. should we find ourselves here or in a school in Johnson County, but equally it could be applicable to whatever these kids and staff members learn, they take that with them everywhere they go for the rest of their lives.
Right. And, you know, and that's all we can do, right, is try to prepare and train for that moment. And this is what still, I think to this day, whether it's law enforcement, you know, school faculty, you know, the fire and EMS side, is that we all understand why we need to train, right? Because those are the big buzzwords, right? Building up that muscle memory, visualizing, you know, I'm a visual learner,
adrenaline, focused learning.
Mm-hmm. You know, focused learning. And but that's what people got to understand, where, you know, we're 24 years, you know, into the post-Columbine, I'm sorry, 23 now this year. 25th year anniversary, actually. Okay, coming up this year, right, in April. We're 25 years deep into hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, training law enforcement and EMS to do the right thing, right? Then you look at Uvalde, right? So, you know, 23 years after Columbine, how do we have this massive failure? Well, you look at just that, right? Everybody thinks that they'll do something under stress, right? But, and we understand, at least on the law enforcement side and in the EMS first responder side, that, you know, people act differently. They make different decisions under that survival kind of brain, right? Under extreme stress, right? Where that adrenaline dump kicks in. And what people don't understand, like, the adrenaline dump, you know, we go back to our animal brain. Those are all the buzzwords in law enforcement, you know, officer survival classes, you know, performing under pressure classes. But they still don't truly understand it, right? A lot of people think of that freeze or fight, you know, thing. Well, okay, I just can't freeze, right? So I need to do, you know, fight or flight, going back to primitive man, right? Under stress. Well, like a Uvalde situation, right? Where those cops weren't frozen, you know, those 19 cops weren't frozen in that hallway, you know, to most people. But in our world in law enforcement, they were frozen, right? They weren't, you know, hunkering down, hiding. They weren't just, you know, locked up like some untrained people would be. You know, A, either getting shot at, or B, somebody else gets shot, where you literally, everything stops. You know, your brain is hijacked by the adrenaline dump. You haven't had any training, any preparation, never been in a stressful situation. That's where good people we watch on TV or you know, video footage, where they literally just freeze. Their body does not move, right? But it's kind of like when you look at a group response, right, that, you know, we didn't just get 19 cowards in that hall, right? They were different agencies, right? You know, small town, big town, federal agents with, you know, Border Patrol tactical, right? They have an unlimited budget to train with. Those are the people that call us with a credit card that's hooked literally directly to the Federal Reserve Bank. They don't ask us how much training costs. Okay, we need to send 15, right? So, you know, because we look at, well, was it a training aspect? Was it a lack of leadership? Was it, I mean, it was a lot of those things, right? But like a spider web, a snowflake, right? To where maybe lack of training, lack of leadership, right? Different agencies that don't train together. Hierarchy, right? In our world, paramilitary cop organization, I don't really ever question authority, right? I don't go up to my lieutenant or my sheriff as a two-year cop and say, hey, lieutenant, why are we still standing here? I feel like somebody else is going to make a plan. Coach put me in. I'm ready to go. We're ready to go. But someone over here with all the stuff on their name tags and their collars, they're going to make the decision, right? So you got to look at how good people with training and experience, how does that stress affect them to where they start making a bad decision, right? Then you got contagion, groupthink. That's natural, right? That's like survival clan mentality back before we invented weapons. You're doing this, so I'm going to do it, right? I feel comfortable. You're right next to me. Right there is strength in numbers, right? So you lose that sense of urgency. We've got hierarchy. We got, you know, policy, procedure. Government is so heavy, right? It stops that free thinking. You know, so you see how it's not like one easy, well, it's just, you know, they didn't train enough, or they didn't do this, they didn't have good command structure. And then just natural stress, right? The biggest call of their life, or the biggest event of someone's lifetime, right? We can't prep you for that. We can give you all the training in the world, but it'll never be as real. It'll never be as stressful, right? So you look at, how do we take great people, you know, I mean, a bunch of, you know, cops that obviously didn't want that to happen, right? Inside that hallway, you know, how did they have a massive failure? Well, it goes down to truly not understanding the psychological stuff behind that, right? To where they're not frozen, but they're foggy just enough, right? So that stress under time, they start moving back to the animal brain, to where they're going through the motions, where there's muscle memory, they're stacked up in the hall. I can go to any cop in here or in this county, never worked with them a day in my life, but if I explain, hey, we're going to go make entry into this room, stack up. We get up, we've done it a million times. So it's like where they think they're being useful. And with the stress, the buildup of stress, then not one of those cops in that hallway, and this can happen to just anybody, right, to where you're not completely frozen, but as time goes on in a group response, you start getting watered down. and you go with what you know. Okay, I'm stacked up. I'm the sheriff's deputy, right? I got a police officer in front of me. Behind me is highway patrol. We're ready to go into this room, right? We're waiting for our command staff to give us the go ahead. Now we're waiting on equipment because we need this. We can't get in the room, whatever their excuses were that day. But as that goes on, right, biggest call of their life, so they're stressed out. They think they're being useful individually. Hey, when someone tells us to go, we're going to go. You know, I'm up here. I'm like, hey, I'll open the door. You know, deputy, you go left. I'll go right. Hey, state patrol, you'll go straight to the middle of this room. You know, I've checked my gun 5 times. It's loaded because we have a policy procedure that says it needs to be unloaded in my cruiser. My light's on in case it's dark in there. But all that stuff that, you know, muscle memory, they're used to training. They think they're being useful. I don't question my command staff. No one took a step back and said, wow, guys, I'm a 2-year cop, brand new out of the academy. But the last training I went to was an active shooter class. We don't stay outside. Why are we still waiting? It was numbers. We got 19 of us. We got 38 guns. There's an 18-year-old with one rifle inside of a room. But they're so watered down, right? They're not frozen, but they're not using a frontal lobe like we're using now, right? This is why I have cognitive thought. This is why we can problem solve, talk, short-term memories up here. They're just stressed out enough over time, that slow drip, like a Keurig coffee maker, where they're foggy. And they get caught in this contagion. You're doing this. We're already doing this. Any minute, somebody's going to tell us what to do. But it takes that individual free thinking away, right? And it's like a snowflake snowball to an avalanche. No one stops that buildup of bad decisions, and they get hit. The train derails.
So what have you done to tackle that this week?
Yeah, so that's what we have to do, right? When we come in, we start at the very bottom, the low-hanging fruit, right? And that's what we talk about all the time is, you know, starting with just the kids, right? Each individual kid, whether it's a kindergartner, you know, but especially on up in your upper, you know, middle to upper level grades, where their actions will help staff work together quickly, right? And they'll say it, each one of those individuals' actions will help save more lives than the responding cops, right, for what they do. And you got to start with those minute details, right? What does each person do, right? How do they understand it? You know, let's give them some knowledge, right? A little bit of training so that they can at least decide to do something, right? And then and make a decision and try to do it as safe as possible, right? And we can't assume that anybody's going to jump into that unless we foster a little bit of extra knowledge, a little bit of confidence, you know, so they can get to a decision-making phase. And, you know, that's what's important is as you start training these kids, you know, we're on our third year. It went so good this year, right? It was more an evaluation piece to where every school building had a different age-specific scenario, right, for staff and students. And we saw a lot of great things this week, but we also identified some areas of improvement, right, at each facility because they're different. They have different technology. They have different, you know, obviously layouts. But that's what you got to start with, the low-hanging fruit, right, to make sure that they understand their role. And in this case, it would be the kids, right, then the staff, and then working with the police, you know, to get them dialed in and make sure they're still, you know, up to current trends and tactics and working together, you know, as two agencies. So
how did you find it? I'd like to ask mm-hmm. you this question, you know, first about students. And there's quite a diverse range of students, you know, they've got K through 12 mm-hmm. for a start, but there's quite a wide variety of different attitudes and abilities and so on within our students. How do they respond to this? When you actually start to think about how it would be to be involved in some kind of active shooter, an indiscriminate shooting of some sort with somebody who seems to just have random mania on their mind and their only intent is harm with a very powerful weapon, when you actually start to think about that, it's stressful.
Right.
Our students already live in a stressful world. It's probably more stressful for them than it was the equivalent of 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, mm-hmm. if you were a high school student particularly. How do they respond?
Yeah, so I think our first trip, right, when they just have the one-pronged response, you know, literally just a barricade, maybe an evacuation piece, depending on the school district and how aggressive they are. When we come in on our first trip, you know, we start talking to the kids and they almost feel like sitting ducks, right? With just that one or maybe two pronged response. And certainly they've never been trained on it. The staff will lead those drills, right? But they've never gotten formal training. So when we come in, you know, the kids, once we show them and start working with them on the angles, the quick peeks, you know, how to check and look and see if the hallway is okay. Okay, it's safe. My immediate, you know, area is now. Can I get somewhere? Is there an exterior exit? Which direction I need to travel to? How do I get there from point A to B, you know, somewhat rather quickly? I think they feel more empowered, right? When we come in and we don't leave them in the dark, because we assume that, you know, we're going to not talk to our kids in depth about it because we don't want to traumatize them, right? Or we don't want, you know, them to be put in harm's way. But, you know, they're figuring it out on their own, right? They're you know, on the internet, or they just feel like they're unempowered, right? They feel like sitting ducks. They're like, man, you know, this is great. We get to barricade the door. Wow, this is great. We can evacuate, you know, if I'm the, you know, sophomore, you know, out in my free period working on an art project or some type of presentation with my work group in the cafeteria, and we get a lockdown drill, I'm not looking for an adult for direction, you know? Oh, I can just get out. Absolutely. You know, get out and run to I-25. I don't care where you go. Just if you can safely get out, that's better for everybody, right? So when we come out and we include them, right, and it's teamwork, they work with staff, and then we show them a few things, they actually come up, they thank us, right? They're like, wow, thank you so much for this training. You know, I've always felt that what we did here was ridiculous, or my parents told me to do this. I'm like, well, your parent must be a cop or a soldier or something with some you know, some type of training. And but they feel empowered, you know, because they just, especially when you put them through the drills, right? Especially younger kids, you know, lock the door, shut off the lights, and you shove them in a corner right away and just have them be eerily quiet for 15 minutes. I mean, to me, I would feel terrible over there in the corner, right? At least when they're building the barricade, they're staying busy. They're working together. They're empowering. Hey, you're not getting in here. You know, we're not just going to hopefully, you know, magically hide over here in the corner and act like we disappeared. You know, especially those, you know, fifth grade through eighth, they feel better, you know, because it keeps them busy.
And what would you say to parents of kindergartners, you know, right, those young yeah, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, you know, who are sort of acknowledged probably that this is something their kids need to know about, but they really are concerned about how it's delivered to them.
Right.
How do you reassure them?
Yeah, and that's what we tell them. We invite them too, you know, and they're invited by the school districts to come and watch. And literally they think they're playing hide and go seek. And they're like, literally, we call it little baby duck ninjas. And literally, they love ninjas at that age. They know with a mama duck goes this way, the baby ducks follow them. And they know, and they love playing hide and go seek. And it's, literally, they don't understand why we're doing it at that point, but they think they're playing a game. But again, it introduces them to our program so that when you get to third, fifth grade, seventh grade, you know, they can kind of have the I guess, the foundation of it.
I mean, the reality is that if they were in that actual situation, there would be a lot of noise, there would be a lot of,
right,
you know, distraction,
right,
outside the door. You know, it would not feel like a hide-and-go-seek,
right,
experience, but at least they've had some exposure to the concept of what they should,
right,
do.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, you know, as far as, like, the stress and hearing the other things in a real event, you know, we don't do that with that age group. You know, we do it with some of the high schoolers on up. But, yeah, at least they'll have some experience of, at least to hide, and because we can control that part, right? We can control how good they are at hiding, how good they are at following direction, or following their teacher in an evacuation situation. You know, those are things we can control, right? And that's about all we can do with that age group without, you know, pushing the limits and making it to where, you know, our obviously our last thing is to even, you know, get close to causing undue stress on those kids. But, you know, that's the piece that we can control. So we try to, you know, focus on that.
And what about staff? I mean, staff are in school because they love to teach, mm-hmm, and they want to teach. They don't want to have to deal with, you know, something as difficult as that and the responsibility and guardianship of the students in front of them. How do students respond?
I mean, staff.
And staff respond.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem. And, you know, they respond great, overwhelmingly, you know, like, you know, it depends on where you go to. It's geographic, right? So I feel like in Wyoming, 90% of the staff are on board. Okay, the other 10% are not. There's various reasons, and that's for another conversation. But I believe, you know, about 90% of them are very thankful. They understand the need for it. And it's also grade specific too, you know, like you get the kindergarten and the earlier age, you know, group, you know, their teachers, they're different than high school teachers, right? Their stress levels, their anxiety levels are different. It's kind of funny when you start working with the school district, you can expect the same thing in different places, right? They're different kinds of teachers, right? I mean, do you want us to hang out with little kids or do you want to hang out with high schoolers? You know, unless I'm a sub and I get forced into every direction, you know, they kind of focus on those different age groups. So, you know, so there's those issues too, but you know, I figure it's about 90-10 here in Wyoming, right? They understand the rule. The cop isn't going to be right down the street, right? Even in a small town like this where you have a pretty decent law enforcement, you know, amount of law enforcement officers, right? It still may be time for them to get into buildings, you know, to get to you to help out. And then you get some more rural places like KC or Claremont or Veda, Ten Sleep. I mean, it might be 45 minutes till they get a cop, right? So I feel like it's, you know, they're really on board because they know they got to do less with more, just like every day at home, right? If I figured eggs or something from Walmart, then I'm going to Sheridan or I'm going to Casper, right? So they get it. There's 10% that will never get it. And honestly, I think that's personal choice.
And their resistance is typically what?
Well, it's a lot of things. They don't agree with the topic, right? They don't think we should be having this conversation with our kids. They probably don't like firearms. They think that the answer is just to take away all guns. I mean, and literally it stops at that point, right? And you can feel it. And
so it's a philosophical point of view.
Absolutely. You know, because if they took that out and the emotions out of it, thought, okay, regardless of my stance on this or that, it's a problem that won't be fixed, right? If it was an easy fixable problem, it's 25 years after Columbine, it'd stop happening, right? But what we got to put all those things aside, right? And whatever, you know, that's another spiderweb of a problem, just like how good people make bad decisions under pressure, right? It's not one easy answer, else we'd fix it. That's a whole nother spiderweb or snowflake, right? There's a lot going on there. And, you know, I feel like, you know, we got to put those differences aside, whether or not, you know, it's unfortunate that society has gotten this way, or A, take away the firearms because that's the answer. Well, that ain't happening. And none of those things, the mental health issues, all those things are not going to happen overnight, right? So it's a philosophical difference, and you can feel it because it's emotional, right? It's you know, they're disconnected right when you walk in. They're doing the bare minimum through the drills, and we didn't see a lot of that here in Johnson County. I'm just talking, you know, kind of in general, you know, what we see, the general pushback. And it's, I've done this long enough, you know, 17 years now, you know, and a little bit less there with the school faculty, but you can tell right off the bat, you know, it's an issue, and they don't want, because of those philosophical issues or the differences, that, you know, they just shut the topic out in general. Like,
what about the other side of that equation, yeah, which is arming teachers?
Right. I'm all for that, right? With proper training, right? So, you know, especially in areas where they don't have that, you know, that quick law enforcement response. But really, you can't replace somebody there right there in the first couple minutes, right? But there's got to be adequate training, right? There's got to be adequate firearms training. There's got to be adequate law enforcement grade reality-based training, you know, for these staff members, where we put them through the stuff like we did today with the cops, right? Very rapidly evolving, realistic scenarios with role players, with guns that shoot at each other, you know, so they can learn marksmanship, weapon handling, you know, and just that reality-based training where it's as real as it gets outside of a real environment, right? We're not just shooting paper targets. Anybody can do that. I can make anybody the best shot in 5 hours if they listen. But it's dealing with the human element, right? Real role players under that stress. And I think they could be effective, right? So, but again, it's who do we pick, right? And why? What kind of training we give them? But they can certainly be effective, right? And there's different areas. There's being defensive and offensive, right? So with that proper training, that staff member would understand, okay, do I got a full-size firearm, a mid-size firearm? Do I got a small one with 8 rounds, or do I got a full-size with 17 rounds?
And another issue is, where does that firearm reside?
Right.
When it is, yeah, not required, and how is it accessible but safely secured?
Right, yeah. It does me no good to have it locked in my room now that I'm out on passing period or I got lunch duty and something happens. Well, what am I going to do? Call a timeout, run back, get out of my room? But I also don't want it flying off somebody's, you know, ankle holster or falling out of their pants, you know, because they bent over.
Or somebody assaulting you and taking it from you and using it against you.
Right. That's another one too, right? Weapon retention. So, and that's where it's not as easy as people think, right? You get to a state like Wyoming and we're all gun, you know, they're all gun people, right? They've all grown up shooting firearms. They're all vets. Everybody will tell you they're a shooter, right? But everybody can be a shooter, right? I get it. But without proper training and in high stress training, right, they're going to make bad decisions with that firearm, right? That's easy. That's easy. And so, but with that proper training, right, and getting some of those staff members exposed, they may think, oh, you know, this isn't for me. You know, I've been shooting paper targets on a square range my whole life. I've been shooting animals, whatever. I'm a gun expert, but wow, this rapidly evolving training iteration, just, I can't, you know, we get some of these people in here that are non-law enforcement, right? Whether they're security teams, school districts in other states, in other places that we do that training, where they get so stressed out, they can't even talk.
So
right?
Do you actually have a somebody playing the role of an active shooter and,
oh, yeah,
and actually
absolutely.
Going through that? So they really do get a taste for...
Oh, yeah.
What that mm-hmm. could feel like, and for many people, the concept of actually shooting another human being
right.
is extremely difficult, regardless of whether they are hurting you or not. In that heat of that moment, that
right.
is a very difficult thing
yeah.
to do.
Oh, absolutely, and you even look, yeah. So we put them in a, you know, that reality based training where, you know, they're inside of a building. You got your gunman with a rifle. They give you a pistol because that's what you're going to have. You know, all the role players for the sensory overload. You know, this is what we've been doing with cops, you know, since, you know, right after Columbine, right? Trying to ramp that up for normal cops to hopefully make them successful. And they still make mistakes, right? So when you get them into that role and you have all that stress, all that extra, what we call, you know, stimulus, the overwhelming senses, you know, the loud noises, you know, actually physically shooting at someone that's shooting at me. You know, some people get so locked up, they literally can't even speak, and it's just training, right? You got the mask on, they're literally stuttering, right? And they're trembling. You're like, okay, this isn't for you. You thought it was because you carried a 1911 your whole life, and, you know, you can shoot a 338, you know, Lapua at an elk at 1,000 yards, but that's different than close quarters combat, right? So... I'm all for it if it's adequately trained, you know, staff, and you got the right staff members in place. And that's where that training piece will weed out some of the people that probably shouldn't be carrying, you know, and make it realistic. Like I said, do I have a mid-sized pistol with maybe 12 rounds, or do I have a full-sized pistol with a you know, extra magazine? Now I got 34 rounds. You know, I don't have to go and defend this whole school because it's 300,000 square feet. But can I defend just an 8-foot hallway? Because that cuts off the kindergarten through third grade wing, I can get on my knees, a decent position behind cover concealment with my pocket gun, you know, Springfield, you know, Hellcat, you know, Glock 43X, whatever. And I could probably deny access to that 12-foot wide hallway if I had to. I'm not going to go hunting, but I just denied access to 300 students waiting for the county deputy to come or game and fish. So there's a fine line, right? I'm not going to tell that teacher to run, you know, up to the second level, 200 yards away, you know, and get slaughtered on their way, right? But they'll think they're going to be able to do that, right? But there's different ways to be effective. And until you do that training, they have no idea.
So, I think you raise a very interesting point there, which is that it's just part of being a team
right.
that takes down
absolutely.
A perpetrator. It is not necessarily being the one and only
right.
hero. And taking on the entire mm-hmm. job,
right.
There's a place, but training is intense.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we do with the kids, right? They're part of the team. The staff is part of the team. Law enforcement is part of the team, right? Because everybody's individual effort there is gonna create a better outcome in the end for the community, right? And it's not just one piece. And that's why we wanted to get aggressive with the staff and the student body, right? Because you know, you've got all those other moving parts, but, you know, we can't rely on one or the other because that one is not enough, right? So, and they all play off of each other, right? So, and you know, like anything else, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? So.
And these events do not go according to a script.
Right, absolutely.
There is commonality in them, but there is not a script. You don't know exactly what's going to happen next. And I suppose, you know, if there was one thing that you could point to that you wish that society was addressing in tackling this issue, is there something that you wish that we all would do or know better?
I think it's getting better and, you know, becoming, again, more of a life skill, right? To where, you know, private sector's, you know, providing this training, you know, for their employees. Public sector employees have always had it. But now the general public is getting it, A, either through information or B, through their employer, you know, to where, as far as on the response side, right, not to what the issues are and how we solve this problem in society, because you and I and everybody else here will keep, you know, debating this for years and sadly nothing will probably get done that's worthwhile. But the only thing we can do in the meantime is educate people, right, and give them some, just a little bit of knowledge that goes a long way. That will hopefully help them either out in public with their family, you know, at an event, at the grocery store, or at their workplace, whatever it is, you know, to make those good decisions so they can safely, you know, remove themselves from that situation. Because, you know, it's unfortunate they're not going to stop. It's a very complex problem. It's not going to be solved overnight. But the one thing we can do, regardless of what we think the issues are, the problems, the easy fix, whatever, is at least educate people and not leave people in the dark, right?
So the point being that at the moment we do not have a means of preventing the need to respond.
Right.
What would you say, you know, just to wrap up and some last words, if people are thinking, you know, well, what would I do? What should I do? What can you distill down if somebody is in the movie theater, in the mall, in the airport, wherever they are? What should they do?
Yeah, absolutely. So we talk about that, right? So, you know, I can't make you a mind reader, right? So if I pull a gun out and I'm within basically eyesight of you, right? Or within, let's say, 15, 20 feet, depending on the weapon. But if I'm right there, don't really have a plan for you, right? We can't put magnetometers everywhere. We can't lock everything down like a prison. No one wants that, and we shouldn't have to live that way, right? So I don't have a plan for that, right? Those people right there on the X, you know, we talk about like maybe when 9/11, when the towers fell, you know, I don't have a plan for those people right underneath that you know, pile of rubble. But as long as those seconds unfold, right, and people don't freeze, right, whether they start moving because they're right there and they don't freeze up, you know, they start getting some time and distance away from the threat, you know, or they're not right there at the ambush spot, right? And they don't freeze. Then everybody starts to have an opportunity, right? Whether they evacuate, right? And I don't like to say run means no plan, right? I'll show you plenty of video where staff members run, people run, and they run the last steps they take of their life, right? So, you know, every looks at our program, they're like, well, we have that run, hide, fight. I'm like, well, there's your issue right there, is run. I'll show you cops who run that no longer have a head. I'll show you security officers who run that don't have a head. I'll show you, unfortunately, unarmed staff, unarmed citizens, right, that run back to help or run this way because everybody else is running this way. Well, it's the last steps to take their life. So we focus on that evacuation with quick peaks and angles, right? Similar to how a law enforcement officer would walk alone through a building safe and quickly without hopefully getting shot, right? But now we have something to defend ourselves with. But, you know, to where you go to evacuate or you barricade, right? So just not freeze, but you got to have that three-pronged response to where, okay, you know, and I can start anywhere, right? I don't have to start with evacuate, barricading at the last minute fight. If I'm in that, you know, open area and you're within 10, 12 feet of me, if I want to live, I need to attack you now, right?
Right.
If I stop, I mean, lock me out of where? I'm in this room with you. Barricade what? I'm standing right next to you, right? So that's where our piece is, you know, in the middle where, you know, you don't know where you'll start. Right. And we'll never be able to give you that answer. But I got to have a three-pronged response. Got to, you know, so right off that, if you're not right there at the ambush point where the event starts. Right. OK, we tell people just let it breathe. Take a minute or, you know, a second. Evaluate. OK, who am I with? Am I with my, you know, fifth grade, you know, or let's say 6-year-old kid and my 15-year-old kid. Right. And I'm in a grocery store. Well, I got some decisions to make. Right. Because my 5-year-old might just go straight to screaming and crying. Now, my 15-year-old might just run by them themselves, right, because they're a big adult. Or they might be able to stay a little calm, help me out. But do I pick up my 5-year-old, grab him? You know, do I, you know, obviously move in an opposite direction? But that's where we talk about having that three-pronged response, right? Because every situation is vastly different, right? Now, if I'm an adult, single, ready to mingle, or adult workplace where I don't owe my fellow employees anything, my coworkers, then I could just find a safe evacuation route, get out, or lock down in place somewhere. You know, and you got to have those three-pronged response, right? But you more importantly, though, you know, you've got to kind of evaluate the situation. It may take a couple seconds. Okay, is it safe for me to move? Okay, it is. Which direction I need to move and why? Or no, I can't move. I need to find a place to lock down and barricade. But just having that overall sense of here's my three options. I can start anywhere. And then the biggest thing is what's important now, right? And that's what we talk a lot about in our programs. Is as the situation unfolds, right? We need, whether I'm by myself or with a group of people, whether we're young children or adults or even cops in a group response down a hallway, we need to take a step back and reevaluate our situation. Does this still make sense? Are we still safe? Or is there a better option? Do we need to do something else? Instead of just following that process that we already started, right? That's where we see good people make bad decisions is as they go on, it might be 5 seconds later, it might be 10 minutes later, it might be 35 minutes later because the cops aren't there yet. Are we still okay? When that reevaluation process stops, that's where bad things start to happen, right? That's where mistakes start getting made. So, you know, reevaluate the situation, ask yourself what's important now, have those three responses kind of ingrained in your mind, you know, and then hopefully, you know, just run through those what ifs, right? When you're out in public, what would I do right now? Okay, I've got my mom who just had a hip surgery, right? And I got my, you know, whatever, 7-year-old kid again. Well, mom's not moving very quick, so if something happens, I've got to get her a place to hide, right? Or now, you know, mom's a triathlete, right? She can run. I can grab the fifth grader. But just those small things like that, because every situation, every venue, whether it's outdoors, indoors, it's going to be vastly different. But I just can't have my head in the sand and think there's going to be a cop there.
Do we know anything? Is there any commonality amongst shooters themselves about what they do? They're also in a highly adrenalized state.
Yep.
Do we know what they do? I mean, you would expect them that if you were running away, that makes you target number one.
Right.
Do we know anything on that?
Yeah, so that's a good topic to bring up, right? And so in our program, we talk about, you know, the human eye catches on movement, right? That's why we get rid of that run piece. That's why we call it more of an evacuation piece, right? So we're kind of looking, vetting the different angles. It's hard to explain, you know, via radio, but to where we can move kind of quickly but slower, right? So unless you're looking right at me, I'm probably not going to pick up some of these moves we're doing, right? Especially in a school building, right, with your nooks and crannies, your recessed doorways, your hallways, where we're teaching that staff member or that kid to get from point A to point B safely. It's trying to minimize that just running, right? Stomping my feet, slamming doors open so that you're not even looking at me. You turn around, you know, from 75 yards down the hallway, I move my gun barrel, you know, 6 inches, I've covered the whole hall. You know, so it's kind of more of a calculated evacuation or run piece, right? And that's why we don't say run. But it's also... you know, you got to think about the shooter, right? Going back to their mindset, you know, they'll have that tunnel vision, that auditory exclusion, right? If they come with no hearing protection and they just wrapped off, you know, 65 rounds in a enclosed environment, their ears are going to be ringing, their adrenaline is going to be dumping. And that's what I tell people, and especially the cops, you're supposed to stay calm, right? With your training, your experience, you should be able to outmaneuver, outsmart that kid, right? Or that untrained person. You know, because they are going to have those physiological effects, just like the cops will. But we're hoping that with the cops training, past, you know, experiences, call loads, they operate a little bit better under pressure, right? But we also forget that, hey, the gunmen's respond, you know, they have that tunnel vision, auditory exclusion, you know, heavy breathing, their marksmanship's going to be off. You know, so to where, you know, you should be able to stay a little more calm, collected, and overwhelm that person, right? And it goes to those trends because they're doing shock and awe now, you know, from the parking lots. The last 6-7 years, outside of Uvalde, outside of the Nashville shooter, you know, the recent ones, the big ones, Parkland, our movie theater shooter, you know, Holmes, on up to, we had a King Super shooting in Boulder, Colorado, one dead cop, 10 others inside that Boulder, Colorado supermarket, right, a couple years ago. Then we had the Buffalo, the racist kid in New York, right? All those shooters are alive, right? So they're not trying to escape anymore, right? But it used to be a precursor to suicide. You know, about 12 years after Columbine, the average length was 5 to 7 minutes, you know, up to where when they heard the sirens, they saw the first staff member, they committed suicide, right? But James Holmes and the movie theater shooters started to stop that trend, right? Where now they're staying around, right? They'll be around on scene for an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, not trying to escape, right? The El Paso Walmart shooter before COVID, he literally put on ear protection, went in and shot up the Walmart in that strip mall, killed several people, and sat in his car for 2 hours in the parking lot until the SWAT team found him. So, and a lot of times we haven't heard about these recent shootings because they're all alive, right? Besides Uvalde, and Uvalde didn't kill himself, right? Border Patrol finally killed him an hour and 52 minutes into it. But he was able to, he was going to stay in there and not take his own life, right? He was able to look at those kids that were mutilated by his bullets, you know, and still at least at that point willing to live with, you know, with his decisions, right? So he didn't take his own life, right? And then Nashville shooter, you know, at that Catholic school after Uvalde, you know, they took him out too, right? So short of those two getting shot by law enforcement, all the other big ones, they're still going to trial, right? That's why I haven't heard anything about them, because they haven't hit their first court date yet. They're in prison. They were caught by a cop, you know, so it's either kill me or take me into custody because I'm not taking my own life anymore and I'm not even trying to escape. Parkland left and took an Uber back, right, to the school campus. So, and he just got life in prison, what, 2 years ago? And that Parkland shooting was 2018. So that's where we go back to our program of saying the recent trends are shock and awe from the parking lot, right? They're all starting from the parking lot in because they assume that we have training. They assume that we have card key access. They assume there might be an armed, you know, person in place now and that we might have cameras, right? So they're like, well, let me start in the parking lots because I watch it on, you know, the movies. I play video games. I mean, they're literally driving there with a GoPro on, with their rifle, you know, pre-deployed like a cop would, putting in park and getting from their A pillar of their car and literally wrecking havoc on the outside of the building going in. And so that's what's even more important. And then obviously now the addition to the outdoor events, because lock me out of here, barricade me out of here. I'm in here with 300 people within my eyesight that are just having a good time hanging out, right? And they'll do it right there in front of law enforcement because they understand they'll kill 10, 15 people before the cops even know who the shooter is. We got 300 people moving this way because, you know, we pre-deploy, you know, law enforcement resources at those big events. That doesn't stop them, right? So that's the big trend is they're not killing themselves and not trying to escape, right? So it's even more important to have training for the public because if the cops don't get there in time or they're rural or maybe you don't get the right cop, right? You get the one cop who thought he wanted to be a cop, but he didn't sign up for that, right? So it's just kind of like that warrior mentality. We talked about taking another human life. You know, there's studies where even during combat, there's only 1 out of 10 soldiers actually trying to kill someone, right? And those are that's been around forever, right? It's very, you can train it, you can try to foster that, but it's very hard to teach another human being that's not psychotic or have mental health issues to take another human life, regardless who they are, right? So that's why, you know, the average person needs to be a little more resilient because one, shock and awe, they're playing video games in Hollywood. And then two, an extended response for whatever the reasons are, but they're not trying to stop, right? They're not waiting the 6 minutes, 7 minutes, having time dilation, think they've been in the school for half an hour, right? Because time slows down under adrenaline. They're not killing themselves anymore. Hey, they're saying, hey, boys and girls, you know, PD, SO, come in and get me, because if you don't, I'm going to be hanging out somewhere on campus here. It may not be obvious, may not be boom, 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 but I'm still hanging out, and until one of you stops me or puts me in the cuffs, I'm, you know, it might be 42 minutes into it, you know, they're just across the street, hiding behind somewhere, waiting for, you know, the other group of people to evacuate, or the one cop not to pay attention for a minute, you know, not actively killing at that point because they've lost, you know, maybe the opportunity for easy, quick victims, but 43 minutes into the shooting, I think it's over. I come evacuating the building while the gunman's right across the street behind the dumpster, right, waiting for the police to find him. And then maybe now that's the 12th victim, right? 52 minutes into it, because they're not escaping, they're not.
Do we know anything about the psychology behind that?
No, and that's the thing where, you know, why they do it, I don't know. Not a mental health professional. I've never, you know, interviewed any of these guys. But what I would love to do is, I've always talked to my guys and saying, hey, you know, there's so many people that try to get the answers out of these shooters, right? Hey, why'd you do it? What were you thinking? I actually want to talk to them when they're sitting in prison here, and I'd probably just write them an old school letter, and they'll probably respond back because that's what they do. Literally a handwritten letter to the prisons, and just I want to know about the psychological piece, the piece that you talked about earlier, where, you know, to give these cops and these teachers and just us as the public some more info, like, you know, what were you physically, not why did you do it? I don't really care about that, right? But I want to feel like, okay, in the moment, you know, did you hear anything? Did you really have that auditory exclusion, right, with that adrenaline dump? Did you have tunnel vision?
Did you have the gratitude that you had rehearsed in your mind so many times?
Yes. How did that not affect you? You know, did it? So on a tactical standpoint, we can help educate our cops, our staff, you know, and just general public. Hey, here's what they feel in the moment. Some are so enraged and crazed, none of that stuff hit them. Or the adrenaline dump was so big, they blacked out. They didn't hear anything, see anything. But I would like to hear that part so that we can hopefully train and implement other things to where we can at least, you know, give some of these cops and other people, you know, a little bit more knowledge and confidence to say, okay, you know, they're experiencing the same thing you are, right? They'll make mistakes, or they won't hear you coming, or they won't see you as well because, you know, they see, you know, the tunnel vision.
We do tend to think that the shooter is the one in complete and utter control.
Yeah.
But maybe they're not.
Yeah, maybe the adrenaline dump was so heavy that they're literally almost peeing themselves just like other people would be, you know, on the victim side.
Well,
the
fact that they are not turning their weapon on themselves suggests that there is still some sense of self-preservation.
Yes.
That human basic self-preservation is an important thing.
Yeah,
I mean, to allow yourself to be arrested, you know, stopped, mm-hmm. rather than
then I'm killing
go
myself.
Out.
Yep, and that self-preservation. You know, at that point, if they still have that bandwidth in their mind, their mental mindset in their brain, where then they're going to, then at some point they still had some of those senses and some of those feelings, right? Otherwise they would have probably killed themselves. So I, you know, it should be, you know, for law enforcement, you take a look at that and say, that should be pretty powerful, right? So they are still feeling those emotions. They are still feeling those physiological reactions.
Do you think that this switch from suicidal mass shooters to those that do not kill themselves, do you think that that's going to impact the way in which you train and prepare?
Oh, absolutely. And it has to be, you know, and that's what people got to understand. And, you know, we can't assume that we're just buying a couple minutes anymore, you know, that the shooting will be over in 5 to 7 minutes or 10 minutes. The shooting might last an hour and a half, and most of them have, you know. If you look
that
at the last
video, very, very long time
yeah.
to
oh,
be
very long
in
time.
That situation.
Yeah, that last supermarket shooting we had in Boulder, Colorado, right? There's 300 cops there on scene within an hour, right? My old SWAT team, the neighboring SWAT teams, all the patrol officers who, you know, since Columbine, this, you know, Denver metro area, we've prepped heavily on this since the academy, right? And it was an hour and 22 minutes until that person was in custody.
And I remember seeing video that you played about
yeah.
that. And there were still basically,
yeah.
there were gunshots going off in the store. And there were people just wandering
yeah.
around still pulling
right.
goods
yeah.
and putting them in their cars.
Yeah.
I mean, we do not react how we think we would.
Right, absolutely. And that's what people got to understand. And that's the biggest thing. And especially in law enforcement, right? There's type A personalities, right? We all think we're going to rise to some occasion, right? But typically that's not the case, right? And even more so with the public, too. Some places you get that false sense of, like, for lack of better terms, bravito or type A personality. We're like, oh, I wouldn't do that. Oh, I would never make that mistake. What was that person thinking? That was so dumb. You know, whatever. Well, we got to understand they weren't thinking with their frontal lobe, right, of their brain. They were back to that animal brain, that basic survival brain, right, that every animal has. And they made mistakes, right? So, and they basically freeze. And that's the thing, it can happen to anybody, right? Now, they may not freeze and not ever do anything, but they'll stall or they won't get to that fight or flight, right? They'll sit there because your brain has to go through the process, right? It's it's called the OODA loop, right? I've got to observe something, right? So I can't be oblivious to what's going on around me. Then I got to orient myself to my observation. Then I got to decide what to do. Then I got to act. Right? And we're not computers. That doesn't happen automatically, right? So when we get a stall, most people get frozen on the first O, you know, to where we see something so heinous, something so terrible that we don't even get close to an orientation phase, right? We're gone. That adrenaline dump hijacks our brain. And at the same time, you know, we go back to that animal brain and there's nothing there. What I like to tell people, it's like a buffering internet, right? You're trying to find your favorite episode to stream and you have, you know, Spectrum, service, right? So it's not fast, right? So, but that will happen and people don't understand that, right? That's why you see those good people or people, you know, that maybe get shot at seriously and 3 minutes, they're not even injured. 3.5 minutes later, they're in the same spot. Right. And the shooter will come back and shoot him. You're like, wow, that person didn't move for 3.5 minutes. I would never do that. You know, but the thing is, you will, though. Right. And people think, oh, I won't. Well, you might. Right. But you'll never know until you're in it. And then obviously we could train for it. But we're not computers. Right. We don't instantly make decisions. And any part there in that OODA loop, especially if I'm right there on the X in the ambush point, then I'm probably not going to survive. Right. But if we can foster that decision-making process so I can get to the decision-making and then act on my decision, whether it's slowed down or speeded up, you know, sped up because I've got some training and some experience, then that's going to help me survive or make a decision to do something, right? But people don't understand that. And they think they do until it really happens. I mean, people get stressed out over an interview. People get stressed out of public speaking. People pit out. They click their pins. They go back to nervous mannerisms, right? That's all that makes us feel good, right? And you know, people stutter if they're, you know, nervous, they don't make eye contact, whatever it is. You know, they get pulled over by the cops, they get butterflies, you know, because their insurance is going up. Oh, they're in trouble, you know. We talk about it all the time. I go, that's not a life or death adrenaline dump, but just that anxiety, that stress is the same feeling. Now, can you imagine somebody's trying to kill you? That stress level's going to be high as a giraffe's ass, right? Shorter terms, you know, whatever. It's pretty high. I haven't been to a zoo in a while, but it's pretty high level stress, right? So, and that's what people don't get. People get geeked up over those type of things. I can imagine times 100, you know.
And that's what you've been spending the week here.
Yeah,
trying to help our community with. And
with a raspy voice. Yeah.
And you, I mean, I know that you've been to many school districts in Wyoming, mm-hmm. and elsewhere. How are we doing? Are we still got a lot more to learn, or are we coming along quite nicely?
You know, I think you're coming along quite nicely, you know, and it's refreshing. You know, the state of Wyoming, I feel like they still use common sense. You know, they have frank conversations. It's not the case everywhere. So, you know, and I've seen that even, you know, just over the years, the last, you know, 15 years or so up here teaching, you know, cops and school districts where, you know, you're light years ahead of other states, right? And that should be comforting and good to know for people. There's always work to be done, but I feel like you guys still have a common sense, you know, conversations and, okay, how do we do less with the, you know, more with less resources? And then, you know, I like it too because your kids are great. The staff is great. And when we teach the kids, you know, let's say a third grader, fifth grader up here, whatever, you know, we go to the inner city schools and some of the more metro areas, you know, I feel like your kids are about 1 or 2 years more mature, right? They have smaller class sizes. They're raised differently. They still respect their peers. They still respect their teachers. So just in that, you know, just because of it's Wyoming and you're rural and you know, a family oriented, you know, good people, for the most part, you know, I feel like you're light years ahead anyway. And it's refreshing to see because we go places and it's definitely not the case.
Well, Joe Dean, thank you very much for spending some time talking about what is really a very difficult subject to consider when you really start to play it through in your mind about what it would be like and so on. Thank you for all you've done to prepare our staff, our students, and our law enforcement for the unthinkable.
You bet. And I wanted to thank you and you know, obviously the school district, the board members, and you know, Sheriff
Odenbaugh.
And Chief Bissett, like, you know, it's been good working with everybody. They've been real supportive. But yeah, I mean, and mainly the parents too, right? They got to sign off on this, you know, through their board members and, you know, to get us out here and do this training. So, if it wasn't for them, you know, we wouldn't be here. So, I'm thankful for Johnson County and you know, the teachers and the parents, you know, the school board and, you know, it's just a good community. So it's been a pleasure. We enjoy every minute of it. So.
Well, thank you. And I hope you enjoy a very restful break for a moment, catch a breath, and we look forward to seeing you again next time.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Thanks again.